Hello, hello, and welcome back to Organic Gardening for Beginners. My name is Jessica, the host of this show. I also have a blog called Homegrown Food and Flowers. I'm a vendor at my local farmer's market, and I have a little Etsy shop selling garden planners and seed kits when the timing is right. And this show is all about helping you to get started in your garden, learning how to use organic and natural and sustainable methods to do so with a minimum of inputs, and overall having so much fun in the garden that you just become totally addicted to it and can't wait until next year, even when it's covered in ice outside like it is right now. So welcome to the show. Today we are talking about garden planning, but a little bit of a different type of garden planning. This is a little bit of the theory behind garden planning that I think might be some tips that you are not hearing so much. I know that my Instagram and my YouTube shorts shelf are blowing up with videos about garden planning and taking inventory of your seeds and how to store them and all the good things. So I know I am right there as another source of telling you about garden planning, but bear with me because I have some a different perspective on it. But two things I want to mention before that. One is I have to give a humongous thank you to Elizabeth, who just left me the most awesome review on Apple Podcasts. And I want to share it with you guys, not because I want to sit here and toot my own horn and say, oh my gosh, aren't I so awesome? Nothing like that. The reason why I want to share it with you is because I felt like this review showed, yes, Elizabeth gets what I'm doing, and she just puts it in such good words. So I'll be quiet and I'll read her review. She says, Jessica puts her heart and soul into this, which already is, yes, that is what I do. Jessica goes far and above in giving great information. It's easy to understand when you listen that she's on a mission to do her best to make sure her listeners are successful gardeners, regardless of their experience. She does the podcast to teach and give back. It's a passion, not a job, and it shows. Thank you so much, Jessica. I feel like I'm listening to a friend when I tune in from Fletcher, North Carolina. Bless you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth. I loved reading this review because this is truly, truly why I do the show. I want to teach what I know, what I've learned after so many years of gardening. I want to inspire others to start their gardens or continue their gardens, or get their kids involved in their gardens, or give an extra plant to their neighbor who's never grown a garden themselves, and just learn what you can, have joy out there, have fun, eat from it, pick a handful of pretty flowers. And I really enjoyed this review. So thank you. And thank you everybody else for letting me share that for a moment. If you want to leave a review, to ask a question, to tell me what you think of the show, you can do that on Apple Podcasts really easily. You go to the show homepage, and then you can leave a star rating, and then right next to it, I forget if it's above or below, it says write a review. And so you just click on that and submit it. And that I always appreciate it, because the more ratings and reviews the shows get, the more likely the podcast platforms are to show the show to new people who are just browsing, you know, the general gardening topic. And so the more people can find it and check it out and see for themselves if they like it or not. So again, thank you. And then the second thing I want to say is don't forget that I put a new freebie in the show notes. There's a link down there for a garden planning, almost like a checklist, and then a calendar for figuring out your sowing dates, where there are organizers for veggies, flowers, and herbs, where you can plug in your last spring frost date and figure out how many weeks in advance you need to start your seeds indoors or when to direct sow them so that nothing is going to get killed by a late frost or, you know, get started too soon, too late. So check that out. A bunch of you have snagged it already, so I hope it's very helpful. You can always email me with questions if you, you know, need to know how to use it or anything like that. So just don't want you to be without your planning tools for the season. Alrighty, now let's talk about garden planning. And I have to give you a status update real quick. So I record this show usually just a day or two before I actually release it, because as nice as it is to record it in advance and have it, you know, scheduled, and I don't have to worry about missing a day or anything like that, I like to do it so close to publication because it puts me in the mindset of what I'm actually talking about. And it also kind of clues me into what's the weather doing, how's that going to affect the garden this year, and the advice I give, especially if you're local to me. I am in Oregon in zone 8, about an hour south of Portland, Oregon. And our weather right now, like much of the country, is super duper cold. We have been getting down into the teens, which is pretty unusual for us. And some areas have gotten a ton of snow and other areas like mine have gotten a ton of ice. And so there's like an inch layer of ice everywhere outside right now. It's pretty unpleasant and it has me jonesing to get out in the garden, even though I know it's going to take a while for it all to melt because it's staying below freezing for several more days. And then let alone, you know, warm up to anything plantable and drain off all that extra water and all that good stuff. So even though it's kind of like a tease to talk about planning when there is literally nothing I can do outside right now to actually implement any of this planning, this is still a great time to start thinking, to start brainstorming, you know, like I mentioned, the reels that you've probably been seeing, to take inventory and all that good stuff. But put all that in the framework that I'm going to talk about here of how to kind of set up your garden for the season. Hopefully that all made sense. So here are five things I want you to think about throughout this garden planning phase that you've got going on. And the first one is to establish your priority in the garden. And by this, I mean, think about what is your ultimate goal. Are you trying to maximize your season and the amount of time that you can grow for? Are you trying to maximize limited space and you need to make every square inch count in your growing space? Are you just trying to create a peaceful place where productivity isn't as important? Are you trying to create a haven for pollinators and birds and other wildlife? Are you just trying to feed yourself from your garden and that's your biggest priority? No one of these goals is better than the other or worse than the other, and certainly not, you know, you can only choose one. But I find, kind of like working backwards, I want to know what's my goal for my garden. And like I just said, you might even have more than one or more than one garden area where the goal of that area is different from another area. For example, I was just this morning, I guess what I said earlier isn't true because I am doing stuff for the garden. I was outside in the ice looking at this area where I'm going to put in a new garden. And it's going to be a 10 foot wide by 40 feet long space in ground. I'm going to see what I can get away with the gophers and voles and moles that we have on this property. And I'm going to put in a traditional looking cut flower garden where it's just like production rows. And the goal is to put out as many blooms as possible. I want to see what I can take to the farmer's market. I want to, you know, see what I can grow in this climate versus where I've been growing for the last 10 years, et cetera, et cetera. So the goal of that space is production. Whereas over on a different part of my property, the goal is to plant as many native plants as possible that can work with the soil that we've got, which in that particular area is super wet, super boggy, does not drain very well at all. And so I want something that can deal with that soil right there, but also because of the more free-flowing nature of that garden area, I also want it to be super attractive to wildlife and birds and salamanders and newts and all those things that we've seen on the property. We have a ton of frogs. And so the goal of those two gardens are very, very different. And so I'm going to plan out those areas differently. For example, in the cut flower area, because it's all about production, I know I'm going to be starting a ton of seeds. I'm going to be direct sowing a ton of stuff and probably flipping those beds periodically throughout the summer as things bloom and are done and I need to replant and whatnot. Whereas the more hands-off wildlife native plant garden, I'll be starting with small plants, probably not direct sowing really anything over there. And it's kind of a one and done where I'm going to plant it and then let it do its thing for the season. And so, you know, depending on what your goal is for your garden, whether it's food production or a mix of everything or just a pollinator garden, that's going to inform what type of seeds do you need? What type of seedlings do you need to keep an eye out for at the store or the nursery if you don't start your own seeds? what other supplies do you need? Do you want to put in drip irrigation so that your watering is taken care of and your plants are getting everything that they need so that they can maximize that production? Or are you just going to let nature do its thing, kind of like what I'm doing in this native plant area where there's already a lot of water in the soil and I probably don't need to water so much? If you know you have tight space, like you're on a balcony or you have a small area in a rented house or apartment, or you even just, you know, you have your house, but you have a small yard and you want to leave some lawn space for your kids or your dog or whatever, do you need to start buying some pots? Do you need to think about what kind of trellises you're going to make so that you can grow vertically instead of needing more horizontal space? Totally fluid, totally, you know, interchangeable depending on what your situation is. But I find that knowing what the purpose and the priority for my garden area is, it can help me work backwards in my planning so that I can kind of have a plan of attack or an action plan going into the season. So think about what the priority is for your space. On that note, the second planning item on this list for this episode is don't be afraid to keep an open mind and change your plan if you need to. Things like frost or kids or pests or deer or bad seed, bad weather, it can all throw off your plan, but that doesn't mean you can't adapt to it. And that's really just sometimes the name of the game, where sometimes you have a bad year as far as weather. You have a wetter, rainier spring than you anticipated, or your winter goes right into summer with almost no transition, and so your plants are suffering. Or your kids get into your newly planted garden and they pull out all your seedlings and they die in the sun before you realize it. Yes, that has happened. And so you just have to pivot. Just, you know, figure it out, either replant or change your plan real quick, or just don't get too discouraged by it, because nature is messy. Nature is chaotic. Sometimes nature kind of does what it wants. And so your garden can take that opportunity to emulate this and just be a little bit more free flowing, even when you had a nice structured plan in place at the beginning of the season. I am totally mentally preparing myself for some of the plants in the boggy area to not do so well because the ground is so saturated. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm going to do, of course, what I can so that they don't die, but they are probably going to grow slower than I'm used to because these are more shrubby type of plants as opposed to the annuals and the veggies that I usually grow. You know, we've gotten this ice storm this winter, which tells me it's possible that we'll get some more inclement weather later in the spring than what we're normally supposed to. And so I'm not only thinking ahead for how to work around it, but I'm also reminding myself, if a frost comes and wipes out my crops, yeah, it's terrible. And I would like to avoid it if at all possible. But if it does happen, I can always either start again or change my plan somehow to kind of work around it. So as much as we want to plan for all the things, sometimes you just have to work with what you've got. All right. Number three, I want to remind you that the two best methods that I use in the garden are companion planting and mulching. And this is probably the 50th time I'm mentioning both of these things because they're so important to how my personal gardens function, and they are such a big part of what I want to encourage you guys to try if you haven't before, or to improve upon if you already implement them. So in nature, plants don't grow in monocrops, and the ground is never bare. Think about any uncultivated area, whether it's a forest or a field or a swamp. There is never just one type of crop. And, you know, I'm not going to the extreme of like big cornfields or wheat fields or, you know, things like that. But just in general, even if you look across a forest and you see all these evergreens, it's not just the trees. There are, you know, there's the understory, there's ground covers, there's dead and dying things everywhere. And so all these plants work together to help each other out, whether that's through soil fertility or one plant climbs on another to get higher, or the taller plant shades out or provides shade for the smaller one that doesn't need the heat so much. Nothing grows by itself. And that is definitely how I set up my garden at home, or when I'm working at the farmer's market and I'm talking to people about what they can plant together, it's always companion planting. And I don't necessarily subscribe to the type of companion planting where it's like you have to grow, you know, your cabbage 50 feet apart from your sunflower. Otherwise, the sunflower is going to stunt the growth of the cabbage. I mean it more in a sense of mix everything together so that the plants can benefit each other. So I could have basil growing with my tomatoes and some lettuce kind of squeezed in between. Not necessarily because the lettuce does magical things for the tomatoes or the basil anecdotally improves the flavor of the tomatoes, but really it's because I want the basil to shade the soil at the feet of the tomatoes to keep the weeds down. I want the basil to go to seed and attract birds that might also eat the armyworms that are trying to kill my tomato plant. I want the tomato plant to provide the shade that the lettuce needs to keep growing into the summer without bolting in the heat. So that's the type of companion planting that I personally use. Or, in the past when I haven't had as much space as I do now, and I needed to grow my herbs, my cut flowers, my veggies all together because that's the space I had. It wasn't going to be a matter of, well, I want to grow cut flowers, but I don't have room for veggies, so I'll only grow cut flowers. Or vice versa, I want to grow some of my own food and I don't have room for flowers, so I'm just not going to grow them. It was, here's a 2-foot section of zinnias that I'm specifically growing to cut for bouquets right next to my green beans that are growing up this trellis that I'm going to eat. So everything has become mixed in, both for space in the past, but also just because in my experience, things grow so much better when you mix and match them this way. I actually got an email not too long ago from somebody who was saying that they had trouble with armyworms in their garden last year. And I've mentioned this. I don't honestly remember what episode it was, but I talked about armyworms in my garden and how I had planted the second year after dealing with them. I planted way more flowers in the garden. This was one of my big pivoting years of planting flowers in with all my veggies. And I just so happened to plant bright colored flowers. Zinnias probably, or maybe it was black-eyed Susans. And that brought in the orioles who are attracted to these brighter colors. And the orioles just cleaned up my tomato plants. It was amazing. They came in and ate every single armyworm. They were no longer a problem that season. And it was so cool to see what nature can do to take care of itself without me really needing to do anything as far as an input like a spray or even bait trap, stuff like that. It's not fail-proof by any means. I've had crops taken out completely by earwigs that no predator was there to take care of. So I don't, you know, it's, I'm not painting in broad strokes here, but I'm just saying plant things together and see the difference it can make in your garden. It's noticeable. And then secondly, I won't go off on too much of a tangent on this one, is mulching, because bare ground is leaving you vulnerable to weeds, to erosion, to desiccating the soil with wind. And again, think about what you see in nature. The forest floor is covered in dead things, in wood chips, in animal manure, in leaves, in ground covers, and even like a prairie, you know, obviously it's not bare, it's covered in grasses, and some of those might feel like invasive grasses if they get into your garden, but it's not bare dirt. So throw some mulch on there. If you need ideas for how to do it or some free sources, episode 12, I talk a whole bunch about, actually I talk exclusively about mulch in that episode, and some of my favorites. I actually just finally, it took a while to find them, I got a load of wood chips from a local arborist, and we have already, before this ice storm hit, we already got to work spreading out some mulch in our garden area and around our chicken coop and whatnot, and it's been amazing. And then jumping back for 2 seconds. For companion planting, if this is a new concept and you haven't tried it, episode 6 and episode 28, I talk a lot more about the details of companion planting, how to use it, why you should use it, if I didn't just convince you with my little mini rant there. There are some more episodes where I mention it, but I don't want to bog you down with too many numbers. Sorry, my voice is apparently tired. It's going squeaky here and there. But anyways, episode 6 and 28, good for companion planting. Alrighty, number four is learn how to start seeds. I love seed starting. It's one of my favorite parts of gardening because it's so inspiring. It's so fun. The possibilities are seemingly endless. And part of what I do actually at the farmer's market is I sell garden kits that include curated seed collections and the supplies that people need to do so, because I want to encourage everybody at least once to start their own seeds for the season. It will break open the possibility of what you can grow and how to understand your garden, the ebb and flow of the seasons, how to find new varieties, how to maximize your season because you have ultimate control over when you start a certain plant versus can you find it at the nursery or Home Depot or not. And if not, then it looks like you're not growing it. I referenced this again in a past episode that one of the seed companies I shop at called Swallowtail Garden Seeds, they have 43 different Cosmos varieties. And I haven't even grown all of them yet. And I always think it's so cool that you have the possibility to grow so many different varieties, more than you would ever see at the store. Or even like Johnny's, they grow a lot of seeds for farmers and flower farmers and market gardens and whatnot. And so they have something crazy like 60 sunflower varieties because that's a really popular crop for flower farmers, most of which you really never see in a home garden. So seed starting is like a super skill to have as a gardener. I know it can seem totally intimidating and a lot of people steer clear of it because they feel like they don't know what they're doing, or they've tried it before and the seeds have died or sprouted and died. And this is one where time is kind of on your side, because if you spend a week or even a month starting seeds and nursing them along and they die, chances are you can start either that thing again or something else and try again. So if it's, you know, March, we'll say, and you're starting your lettuce plants and you get them going and they die in a hailstorm, or your kid dumps them out, or you get a snail that comes along and eats everything, it does suck. You know, you have my sympathies because I've been there too. But you can try it again with that lettuce plant. Or if you decide, you know what, I don't want to try again with lettuce, I'll try it with something else, then you've got the whole season left to try another flat of some other type of seed. And I tell you, there's nothing more funny and addictive than going out in your robe with your cup of coffee outside to your germination station, as I call it, and seeing what sprouted overnight. It sounds totally goofy and probably a little dorky, but I love it. It's so fun to see, you know, the little tiny green shoot poking through the soil. And it just, it's kind of a wondrous thing to me to see this tiny, tiny little seed that I know is going to grow into this 8-foot tall tomato plant. And when you buy a seedling, which is handy, and I sell seedlings and, you know, not knocking that, but you skip that beginning part where you've already got the plant and that first, you know, month or two of all that from seed to seedling development, there's just something about it for me that just makes it special, and I love it. And I'm always encouraging people to try seed starting, because I think that once you get the hang of it, it just totally changes your gardening game. So in any case, very passionate about seed starting, and I cannot wait to get back to the farmer's market to talk to people about it again, to have those seedlings, you know, encourage them to start their own seed of the same type. It's just a big part of my gardening year. Alrighty. And then lastly, number five is for garden planning, find ways to use what you grow. And I think this might sound like a slightly unusual one as far as garden planning goes, but I say it because it's easy sometimes to grow things because you think you should, or because you always have, and without really thinking about, well, what are you going to do with that thing once you grow it? When you're making your garden plan and you're making space for whatever this plant is, why? Are you actually going to use it? Do you want to grow it? Or is it just kind of an old habit? And my example is every year, I don't know why I do this, but every year I plant eggplant and I never use it ever. It goes to waste on the vine. Granted, you know, if I do it again, I can feed it to my chickens now, but usually it just goes in the compost. I like the idea of growing eggplant. I love baba ganoush. I love roasted eggplant, eggplant parmesan. Delicious. But for whatever reason, I never actually use it when I grow it. And it turns out fine. It's not like it's bitter or tough or anything. It just, I don't know. It's a mystery. And so this year, I'm not going to include it in my garden plan. I have spent too many years giving it space, giving it water, giving it attention to never actually do anything with it, that I'm making a pointed effort to not include it in my garden planning. So when I'm figuring out, you know, my seed starting schedule and my spacing and all that, it does not include eggplant. If I decide I want one, then I'll go to the market and buy one. And so if you are concerned about space or time to take care of your garden or, you know, going back to your priorities, make sure you're going to use what you grow. Are you going to cook it? Are you going to can it? Are you going to dry it? Or make medicinals, cut a bouquet with it, feed the pollinators with it. The more you use what you're actually growing, the more time and effort you're going to put into your garden, the more you'll learn about the whole process and what you like to grow, and the more encouraged you'll be as the seasons go on if you are getting that end benefit out of your garden. And of course, maybe your end benefit is just grow flowers and watch the butterflies come. Totally awesome. No problem. But that's still, you're getting a product out of that. You're growing something that the butterflies can use. But don't fill your garden with cucumbers if you hate cucumbers and you don't plan on making pickles and they're just going to rot on the vine. You know, maybe a wildlife will come along and eat it and that's awesome. But if you want to use your space well or use your time well or learn what you can about growing, then I don't know that growing cucumbers would really fit the bill. Just like growing eggplant does not, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, as my husband says, for growing eggplant, because I just don't do anything with it. So use what you grow. I think that making medicinal stuff is one of the big things on my list for this year. Of growing calendula, growing lavender and yarrow, and starting to make salves and basic tinctures and whatnot. And so in the past, I've grown yarrow for a cut flower, or I've grown calendula just because it's pretty and the pollinators love it. But this year, I'm going to try to find different ways to use what I grow. And so that's going to inform my planting plan, where I'm growing a ton more calendula than I ever did before, because I specifically have a reason to grow it, and I know how I'm going to try to use it at the end of the season. So, as I said, slightly different keys to garden planning. Again, you know, the standard advice of grow in full sun, water regularly, all those are all well and good, totally true, and you do need those. But I wanted to highlight a few other ways to think about your garden planning that you might not have before, or, you know, if you're newer to the gardening world, or even if you've been gardening for many years. I get some really awesome feedback from people who have gardened for a long time and they still are learning little tidbits from the show, or, you know, different ways to think about things. So hopefully this episode can be that for you, no matter where you're at in your gardening lifespan, because hopefully it is a lifespan thing for you, because it's so much fun. Alrighty, that's it. We are talking next week a little bit more about garden planning. We're going to start moving out of the planning and theory side of gardening and more into the how-to, like talking about how to start seeds or how to set up for growing. We are going to talk about how to transplant seedlings without killing them in a future episode. That's one that's been requested by a couple people. And just everything you need to kind of get your season off with a bang and as successful as possible and having a ton of fun, because I just love gardening. Just love it. And I love chatting with you guys and teaching and sharing everything I know. I really hope it helps. And that is it. I'm going to go back outside to the ice storm. Talk to you next week. Bye.